All right, Krishna, everyone, this is Achyuta Bhava. And tonight for Bhakti Wednesday, I'm taking a question from the audience that came in recently. I'm just going to paraphrase it because it was kind of a long email that came in. But thank you for this person who shared it. And the question is, why is storytelling so important in Bhakti Yoga? This person goes on to explain that they've noticed that Bhakti Yogis talk a lot about something that we call Krishna Katha, which means talking about Krishna, talking about God. And a lot of that involves telling stories about God, telling stories about God, or talking about God, or talking about the philosophy of bhakti even. But in particular, storytelling plays a really big role in the Bhakti Yoga tradition. And I think we could extend this to broadly asking, why would God like storytelling? And what is it about storytelling in the bhakti tradition that actually becomes an aspect of the practice of yoga? Great question, right? Especially if you're someone like me. I studied in my MFA program and creative writing. I studied nonfiction writing, so memoir, creative nonfiction, creative retelling of true events, myth, allegory, metaphor, legend, a lot of crossover with, nonfiction, in the sense that we always have to have ways of talking about things that are in some ways inconceivable to our little minds. And myth, metaphor, art, poetry, storytelling, these are at the heart of Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga has always been a literary tradition. It's been rich with plays and poetry and dance and music. It's a very embodied tradition, just like I would say, like our sort of mystical cousin from the Islamic world, Sufism. Sufism is similar in the sense of, like, if you read Rumi, it's a lot of like very beautiful artistic qualities. And at any rate, this devotional tradition of bhakti, one of its core features is to sit around with other people who are interested in God and talk about God, and not just talk about God, but sing about God, sing and chant stories about God in like mantra form, to hear people recite the pastimes of God, talking about the different stories, especially those that appear in the Bhagavat Purana, which is like a massive collection of stories about God. I remember one of my first teachers when I was, he was, you know, suggesting that I give it a try when I was getting into bhakti. And I was like, well, what is it? And he's like, well, it's kind of like the memoir of God. And I was like, oh, I'm hooked, because I studied memoir in my MFA program. If there's some tradition on the planet that came up with a way of telling God's memoir transmitting that, I'm all in. Let me see what that's about. So anyway, the Bhagavat Purana, sometimes called the Srimad Bhagavatam, is really the story of God. It's God's biography. And so one of the things that defines Bhakti Yoga is sitting around and listening to these great narrations and histories and stories, and what effect it has on the soul to sit around and think about, talk about God, and listen to stories about God. And that's said to actually be a practice of yoga. So if you go through my archives and my bhakti catalog, you'll sometimes find me sharing stories from the Bhagavatam. This is something that we're going to start doing a little bit more of. And so I wanted, for weeks to come, a little setup. Why is storytelling so important? And I can always refer back to this video as well. So I'm going to read you a passage from the Bhagavat Purana. And the usual translation that I read and work from is right there on my shelf. It's by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who's my guru's guru. And he translated the entire Bhagavatam, 18,000 verses and commentary, and that whole set that you see there. I'm on my third time through the whole thing right now. I read about a chapter a day. But someone else recently recommended another translation to me, and it's not by someone who's within my particular lineage, but I'm always interested to hear and see how other people translate things, just because it's fascinating to me. And I learn a lot. Anyway, this is from a version by someone named Ramesh Menon, and I literally know very little about him. I've just been reading side by side and seeing how different translation conventions work and so forth. Anyway, I found a really nice passage that I love in the Bhagavatam, and I liked how he translated it. And so I thought I would read it to you. So this is a verse that's talking about bhakti, about the situation that the soul finds itself in, and then specifically the role that storytelling plays, the storytelling about God plays in the process of cultivating God consciousness, Krishna, what we call Krishna consciousness in the bhakti tradition. So I'm going to read some passages and then just kind of do a little explaining to my best of my ability. Obviously, I defer to my teachers and seniors out there if anyone's listening, but as long as Prakriti holds him in her coils, he commits karma in three colors. Now, Prakriti would be like the material energies, like samsara or maya. As long as Prakriti holds him in her coils, he commits karma action in three colors, sattvic karma, which is white, rajasic karma, which is red, and tamasic karma, which is black. His karma leads him deeper and deeper into darkness and ignorance. He thinks of himself as being what he is not. He is born and dies, is born and dies, and is reborn into different species. Sattvic karma may take him into one of the higher worlds full of light, where he enjoys the fruit of good deeds until his punya is exhausted. So he talking about the soul transmigrating in the world of karma. And he does good things. He goes to these worlds of light, but eventually the good karma runs out. It's like an energy that, you know, like all energies, it will tend toward entropy. Rajasic karma causes the jivatma, that's the like embodied soul, to be born in the intermediate worlds where he strives to improve his lot. So rajasic karma is about passion. It's like about trying to get better, do better, be better, get more. And his tamasic karma can fetch him a birth in hell in the regions of bestial darkness. It is by karma that a soul is born as a man or a beast, a bird, a woman, a god, or a demon. So the soul wanders from one life to another, one birth to the next, always seeking something that he has lost, his own immortal self. Of course, the only way back to his Atman and its eternal peace is through our Lord Narayana, it's the name of God, the sleeper on infinite waters, the savior. Not just by sattvic karma, that would be like good karma, good deeds, nor again by yajnas alone can a person liberate themselves from the endless cycles of births and deaths. So not by doing good things and not by ritualistic religious behavior. Only God's grace can save him. And God's grace can only be had through bhakti. The umbilicus that binds the jivatma to samsara can only be severed with the sword of devotion. So bhakti is another word for bhakti is devotion. Bhakti yoga begins with listening to the legends of the Lord. The sacred stories are magical. They fetch the soul back to the paths of worship and of nirvana. Bhakti is to be found only in the cave of your own heart, O Kshatriya, not in your hollow, wasteful sacrifices. When a person is a true bhakta, tales of the Lord flow to him from every side, as rivers do to the sea. Noble people who listen with devotion to the legends of Hari, that's the Lord, feel no hunger or thirst anymore. They rise swiftly beyond the bonds of pleasure and pain, of sorrow and delusion. For God himself dwells in the holy legends, and he works a miracle in the spirit of any jivatma who hears them with a devoted mind. So I love how poetic that translation is, and really gets to the heart of the soul situation and what storytelling does for the soul, storytelling about God. So the soul is wandering in samsara, dissociated from its real nature, temporarily identified with material form after material form, and seeking pleasure for that material form that can't possibly last because of the endless cycle of death and rebirth. And so within this situation, there's typically three different modes that people will use to try to get out of the feeling of dissatisfaction, discomfort, disease, the longing that we naturally feel in the heart for God, we try to pacify it. Tamasic karma is just the really super ignorant dark stuff. You know, really selfish, greedy, all the vices. And that takes us to hellish situations karmically. This is what the Shastra is telling us here. And then you have rajasic karma, where there's a real struggle, a real amount of effort, kind of blood, sweat, and tears poured into getting better. You could think about this sometimes like the idea that I'm whipping myself on the back trying to improve my situation. Anyone will tell you that to improve your situation in life, whether you want financial improvement or physical improvement or improvement of status or whatever, takes a lot of sacrifice and hard work. It's a different kind of karma. And it takes you to what were described as intermediate worlds, where the common theme is people all really working hard to get somewhere, to get something. But there's an effort and there's an attitude of sacrifice that goes with it, like an athlete that wants to win. It's different than someone laying on the couch, just eating tubs of ice cream all day and sinking into laziness and sloth, for example. But it's still a sort of vice-ridden space in many ways, vice of passion. And then the sattvic karma, which is described as the karma of good deeds. I'm going to heal the world. I'm going to be a good person. I'm going to do charity. I want to be good. And then you get good results from doing good things. But even the good results are temporary. So first of all, and even if you were to be the most pious, religious, orthodox, ritualistic, good person in a religious sense, that's still not enough. Nope, the only way out, the Shastra tells us here, is through bhakti, which is devotion. And then it goes on to say that one of the first things that a first sign of devotion is the person who wants to sit down and with an attentive, devoted, you know, a mind that's just totally absorbed, this person wants to sit down and hear stories about God. Not just dry, speculative, philosophical information. They want to know something about the divine original source, the divine being behind all things, within all beings, the self at the self of everyone. That this person wants to sit down and hear about this being, hear about this, this source. And that this person will find that there's, by talking about God and by hearing stories about God, which could be philosophical, but also could be, you know, like literary, could also be just stories about what God likes to do, that by doing this, then more and more and more, you find that there are people around you who want to do the same thing. And you can't help but notice the stories and evidence of God, the narrations of God, the leelas of God, the play of God. You can't help but just start to notice it and want to hear more of it all around you. You can't help but, if you hear stories about God, then you start seeing God's pastimes in the world, little dim reflections. You see little glimmers of God. So bhakti is all about cultivating the ability to hear and see and taste and smell and touch God and to spiritualize our material experiences so that in every avenue of our life, God's just pouring in like rivers to the sea. We start making that connection in the heart. And so story is really, really important because story captures the heart. It's really hard for philosophy alone to capture the heart, you know, but story, where the philosophy is embedded in relationships between God and other beings, those are the stories that bhakti is concerned with. And those are the stories that literally capture our heart and that capture God's heart too. When we're listening really intently and hearing things about God, it's as though God starts listening in too. And God's like, oh yeah, this stuff is good. You know, not because God is like, oh, I just want to indulge in myself, but because it's something God can share with us. it's like sitting around a campfire in the evening, you know, when I think of my little girls and they like tell a story around the campfire. How much fun is that? How connected do you feel? How that memory lives on for so long. God likes to connect with us, and stories are relational. So these are some of the reasons I've understood it, that God likes storytelling, and that one of the reasons that we like to talk about God and tell stories about God in the bhakti tradition is this is where that connection is made. And so it seems kind of like a silly thing that storytelling would be a form of yoga, but you know, there it is. It's such a core part of the bhakti tradition. Let's listen to that passage one more time. Bhakti yoga begins with listening to the legends of the Lord. The sacred stories are magical. They fetch the soul back to the paths of worship. So it's like when you hear stories about God, these stories about God are, you know, I like that he uses the word sacred and magical, that they do something to us, that they have an effect on us. It is very magical, and that it calls our heart back to wanting to worship. Worship is such a tough thing because I don't think most people like worship when it's in a form of, you know, ultra sort of dry veneration. God's up there and we're like, oh, you know, there's a place for, I love chant music, actually, like Gregorian chant, beautiful. No offense to anyone who likes that either. But if the veneration of God, if there's this feeling of like worshiping some 30,000 foot tall almighty, it's not very intimate. It's not very personal. Listening to personal stories about God, having relationships with other beings, this calls the soul back to the path of worship and release, nirvana being a word for like release from material identification. Well, another way of thinking about a path of worship is a path. Worship is really like, if you think, I think a lot about Saint Francis when I think of worship. Here's someone walking through the world and seeing God in nature everywhere and feeling God's personal voice and personal connection to God in creation, right? In seeing the divine beings and the majesty of God's work, God's design. I mean, it's so profound, it's so overwhelming and beautiful. And so when we hear stories about God, they somehow call us back to this. It's not like just an act of worship, but a path of worship, to the paths of worship. And then he says, bhakti is to be found only in the cave of your own heart, O Kshatriya. That's like a warrior, not in your hollow, wasteful sacrifices. It's not in being good. It's not in doing something to appease or venerate a big person in the sky. It's about making some kind of connection in the heart. And these stories somehow capture the heart. When a person is a true bhakta, tales of the Lord flow to him from every side as rivers do to the sea. Noble people who listen with devotion to the legends of Hari feel no hunger or thirst anymore. They rise swiftly beyond the bonds of pleasure and pain, of sorrow and delusion. For Vishnu himself dwells in the holy legends and works a miracle in the spirit of any jivatma who hears them with a devoted mind. So a little tonight on why storytelling is so important. And next week, I think we're going to find one of many different good stories to share from the bhakti tradition and meditate on a little bit. So thank you to the person who asked this question about bhakti and storytelling. I hope this answer makes some sense. And this is why, by the way, for those of you who watch my astrology content, that I love to find stories about the planets in our lives, because if you reflect upon the presence of the planets in your lives as administrators of, you know, God's personal hand in your life, that if you can see the planets as the divine intelligence guiding us, teaching us, drawing us closer, then these stories become the things that grab our hearts. And that's what bhakti is really about in many ways. That's the same reason I grew up in the Christian church, being totally enamored by stories all over the world, stories about God I've always loved hearing about. So at any rate, I hope you're having a great Wednesday. I hope this Bhakti Wednesday was helpful for you, and we will talk to you guys again next week. If you have questions, by the way, info@nightlightastrology.com, put Bhakti Q&A in the subject line. All right. Until next time. Hare Krishna.